Hi, this is Megan Francis, and you're listening to the Kitchen Hour podcast. I'm here to keep you company while you get dinner on the table and help you set aside more time for family, food, and fun. Hi, and welcome to this episode of the Kitchen Hour. I'm here with Laura Lang, who is the author of Math for Grownups and also runs a blog called Math for Grownups at mathforgrownups.com. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Megan. How are you?
Good. It's so great to have you here. I know this is going to be a topic that is going to be popular because it's so common for other adults to say how math phobic they are, how bad they are at math. And I have to admit, I have been guilty of this in the past.
You are not alone.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the process of how you came to write this book and your background, and just give me the whole spiel.
Well, it's a very long story, but I'll try to keep it short.
Okay.
Don't be scared by this beginning.
Okay.
When I was in seventh grade, I fell apart over math completely.
Okay.
I hit integers and I was totally confused by negative numbers. They freaked me out. And at that point, I decided that I wasn't very good at math. And throughout my high school years, I did have a teacher who convinced me otherwise. And I struggled a lot. But for some reason had this internal drive to keep moving and keep moving and keep moving. And I was inspired by this teacher to become a math teacher myself. And so I got a degree in math education, and I taught high school for 4 years. Loved it. But I am an extreme introvert, and so it was killing me, really. Just, I was exhausted all the time, and I had nothing to give to my family when I got home. So I made the hard decision to leave teaching, and after years and years going into a writing career and doing some other kinds of things, I finally managed to figure out how to be an extreme introvert and be able to teach math at the same time. And I've been able to do that through my writing.
And how great that you can reach lots of people that way.
Yeah, it's very cool. And I can do it in my pajamas or, you know, at 5:30 in the morning or whatever it is.
Right.
It's a great combination. And I don't wear myself out either. I still love to teach, but this is a good opportunity for me to teach in a modified way.
Right.
And save the presentation times for bigger events. So what ended up happening is I was talking to a lot of people about the new math and how they were really frustrated with how their kids were learning math in school. And I started looking into what this new math was, and I discovered that it was basically a discovery-based process where the kids are allowed a lot of flexibility in how they approach problems and how they interpret things and how they figure things out, which is great for the kids but horrible for the parents. Mm-hmm. And parents were, in essence, reteaching their kids in ways that are fine ways to do math but kind of challenging for kids to learn math. Right. And we know that from experience. But once you learn how to long divide in this way, then it's really easy to do. It's just hard to teach our kids how to do it. Mm. So they're kind of undoing what was going on in the classroom. So I had this idea to write this book for parents about how they can manage this. But nobody would buy the book. So luckily I talked to an editor about the book, and when they decided to write or to publish Math for Grownups, they came to me and asked if I'd be interested in writing it.
Oh,
and
okay.
Basically, it's the same kind of process. Mm. I'm not going through these algorithms that we learned in high school and middle school and elementary school. I'm trying to reteach, or teach for the first time how folks can do this math in a way that feels very comfortable for them, where they might be breaking the rules that their fourth grade teacher gave them, but they're still coming to the correct conclusions.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. It's interesting that you brought up the new math, because I was just having a conversation with a friend about this the other day. And when my oldest son got into about fourth grade was when he kind of started spiraling. And actually, so he has everyday math, which I assume is what you're talking about with the new math. Yeah. He had a really hard time with it. My other kids have done great. And I think that the difference was for him, he just needed a set of rules and he didn't find that in the curriculum, at least not at first. I think he's gotten it, you know, as the time has gone on. But he was like, he's the kind of kid who will invent his own way of doing things no matter what. So to be in a place where there's no rules and there's no one way to get to a right answer, I mean, he was just like spinning his wheels all the time.
Well, there was nothing to push back on.
Right.
So he was probably taking these rules previously mm-hmm. and saying, oh, but yeah, I get that, but I've got a better way to do it for him.
Right.
And uh-huh. that's how he was able to adapt. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, and but with the other kids, it's been fine. So it's been interesting for me. And also because for me, seventh grade, and I love your story that you weren't a natural math whiz, because I think we often think of people who are teachers and we think, well, what do they know about teaching? It comes easily to them, you know, it's mm-hmm. just natural to them. So how can they help me? Then it doesn't come naturally to me. And it sounds like you just needed a different approach or somebody to take the time to actually make it come naturally to you
yeah.
and figure out a way.
I think what came naturally to me was this, and you know, in seventh grade, this isn't apparent, but as I got older, was this real drive to teach,
mm-hmm.
to figure out the best way. And I'm talking about teaching myself, teaching others, however it worked out, but to figure out the way that it made sense for me to learn the material. So I think that was very internal, but I think the message is for anyone, and I think this is true for anything that you want to teach someone, or that you want to learn yourself, is if you don't have the concepts down pat, but you know how to get to the answer, for mm-hmm. example, how did you get to the answer? That may help someone else get to the answer. So when your kid is looking at a problem and you know how to do it, but it's not exactly, you know, this approved method or whatever,
right.
you can still break it down in a way that your kid can understand it.
Right.
I think the key is to be really flexible.
Okay.
And that's what's hard for us parents on every level, probably.
Right.
But to be really, really flexible and be okay with our kids trying a different way of doing things.
Well, let me ask you this. In seventh grade was, for me, not too bad. That was, I was in pre-algebra. And mm-hmm. that was obviously before the new math. And so we learned things in a very old school way, which I totally rejected. And I was rebellious and I wanted to do things my own way.
Right.
And so that worked for me for a while. Like I was able to kind of do the workaround through that lower level algebra. But mm-hmm. then once I got into higher level math, it totally fell apart because I didn't actually know what I was doing. So I guess that's my concern with these, you know, where the kids can just kind of figure out their own way. How is it, will that foundation, and I must because I know this is a very popular curriculum, but how is this foundation of whatever following through into higher level thinking like calculus, which I just totally gave up a calculus and just
yeah.
dropped out. You could do that in those days. Now you kind of have to stick with it. But
Well, and I'll be the first to say that not everybody needs calculus.
Right.
It's just flat out true. Of course, when a kid is a senior in high school, they don't necessarily know whether they're going to go into, you know, physical education or engineering.
Right.
So it's kind of tough to tell a kid you don't need calculus at that age because they may.
Right.
And they may be able to pick it up later too. So it's not the end of the world. But I mean, that's an important thing for all of us to remember. But I will say that when, and I call it the new math, but it really is a more descriptive term is kind of this discovery-based math.
Okay.
When that is taught well, and it's not always taught well, and that's an important caveat, but when it's taught well, what is happening is that the kids are getting a really strong foundation in some very basic number theory, numeracy, critical thinking skills, logic, all of these things that are really the foundation for any mathematics. Probably the best skill that they're learning in this, which is the hardest one for us parents to accept, is that they're learning that if they fail at something, it's not the end of the world.
Mm.
So if they attempt a problem and they don't get the answer or they don't understand something, they are given another opportunity to figure it out, maybe using a different model, maybe figuring out a backdoor way to get to the answer or you know, drawing a picture or talking it out or whatever. That is one of the most critical things that probably most of us adults did not get as students. When you think about it, every single creative thinker, whether they're in the sciences or in the arts, are really good with failure. They're fine with it. Maybe they don't like it, but they recognize it as part of the process. I want to caution too, I don't mean that we're okay with kids failing classes.
Right.
I'm talking about the little failures that
right.
they have. I will say my daughter is kind of high strung, and she came out this way. It was evident from from infancy that she was high strung, and she has a really hard time with failure. She has a very hard time when she doesn't get something immediately. And this is the thing that I want to work with her more than anything else, because that's going to serve her better throughout the years. So that if she does get to calculus and is like, oh my God, this is awful, I don't understand any of it, then hopefully she'll have that sense that she needs to stick in there with it.
So let me ask you a couple of related questions. Just thinking of the example with my son, when this kind of math, for whatever reason, discovery-based math, is a challenge for them, maybe because their brain is already going in so many directions or they're having a hard time focusing, which I think was maybe his problem. How can parents support them, especially when the parents don't know how to do that kind of math? And I know that's probably one step, but if you're not there yet and you're trying to help your kid do like long division and they're like, we don't do that. It's a real challenge.
I think one of the things that unfortunately schools are not doing a very good job of is that they're not letting parents know what the resources are. Everyday math has this huge parent component to it. And I'm sure that investigations, and I'm just rattling off some of the names of the curriculum, and then there are all kinds that don't have these fancy names either. But they almost always have a component that is specifically for parents. The teachers have an option of sending home materials for the parents. Of course, if schools don't have the funds to be able to run these things off, then that's a bit tricky. But all of them also have websites. So if you know the name of your kid's curriculum, then Google it and look for parent support. Try to tune out all of, because you're going to come across, if you Google any of this, you're going to come across a lot of angry parents. You're not going to get a choice in what your kid's curriculum is right at this moment.
Right.
So try to tune that out and see what you can work with. But all of those websites have great resources. And they even have printable resources that you can use with your kids. One of the very cool things that they do with algebra now, and this is way early, like in fourth grade and so forth, you don't even realize that it's algebra. But they have these tiles that the kids use to indicate various terms in an algebraic expression. And I imagine, and I haven't checked this out, but I know other resources have this. You can print out papers that you can cut out that represent those tiles and actually play with them to kind of help you understand a little bit more what your kid is going through in the class.
And let me ask you about this too. My kids have gone to several different schools, especially not my littler two, but my older sons went to several different elementary schools before they ended up in the system they're in now, where they seem to be doing really well. Each school had a different way of sort of implementing, and they've all had everyday math, but each school had a different way of implementing it. And I noticed that the one where my son was really struggling, they didn't really supplement with anything else. So it wasn't like they were doing that and learning, really focusing on the times tables, for example. And so I felt like the kids were coming in at this like higher level thinking and being expected to do all this creative, and they didn't have they didn't know what they were doing, because it would take them, like my son, he would have to stop and think, okay, what's 7 times 8? I've noticed in the school they're in now, they do IXL in addition. So what is your opinion? Like, is this a program that does it stand alone? Should it need supplementation? I feel like the kids who have it are doing better. And that's my small representative sample.
Yeah. And it could be that your kids came into it at a later age.
Right.
And I haven't read any studies or really looked at this at all, but my gut reaction, and that's all it is a gut reaction, is that if kids are really given the opportunity to explore this from a very young age, they're not going to be uncomfortable with it when they hit the higher level stuff. And I think there are going to be some kids, I mean, and that's the most important thing that any of us can recognize, is our kids think differently.
Right.
One kid to the next. And it has nothing to do with how they were raised or how smart they are or any of it. We all access information very, very differently. And if we try to lock our kids into one set way of learning things, that's going to stump them. I wouldn't say that this discovery based is the only way to learn something. I'm not fond of memorization, and I'm not fond of testing. I'm not fond of any of that. In fact, I will go on the record to say that I have to think really hard to remember what 6 times 7 is every single time. And I don't know why my brain works that way. Probably it's like spelling for me. It's just not that important to me. I'm not a details person.
Right.
I'm much more interested in the big picture. What's the pattern of this whole thing? Not what's the answer. So if I allow myself to move within that area, allow myself to be who I am that way, then I'm gonna get to the answer eventually. It may take me longer, but really, who cares?
Right.
You know, I'm not on a mathletes team, so it really doesn't matter how long it takes.
That's very true.
I think I'm not alone in thinking that way.
Right.
And a lot of times we expect kids, particularly in math and maybe even places like history and so forth, to really just come out with the answer instead of giving them a chance to really think critically if that's what they need. So.
And it does seem like, I mean, there's the little arithmetic that we do every day. It seems like a lot of grown-ups have a workaround. We all have a way that we calculate a tip, you know, or whatever it is.
Absolutely.
And then there's the other stuff that's more high level thinking that would work, you know, like for example, I work as a writer as well. So sometimes I'll just be trying to figure out exactly what is this study saying. And then that's when my brain starts to smoke and like, you know, steam starts coming out of my ears. But
yeah,
it's like, it's a very different process than when I'm calculating the tip and the stakes seem higher too. You know, yeah. I can always add on a little extra and the waitress is happy and I know I got over 20%, but yeah, but, it's a little more at stake when
we do make those adjustments all the time. You do not want your doctor or your nurse or your pharmacist to make these kind of little estimations that we do.
Right.
And they're using tools to help them do that. Or a lot of them have done the calculation so many times, it's very second nature.
Right.
But we always have to figure out, what do we need to do here? Do we need an exact answer or do we need to just get a general idea? What's the gist? And to your point about statistics, this is a really good, important point about math in general. There are so many different branches of mathematics, and it's one of those fields, I guess it's very much like science, where it's this huge umbrella, or like language, where it's this huge umbrella, but the pieces underneath of it are very, very distinct and require very, very different skills and abilities and knowledge. Except with math, we tend to just look at math.
Right.
Instead of, like with language, we think English, French, Spanish, Chinese. And you're only expected to really know 1, 2, 3, or 4 of these. If you know any more than that, man, you're really amazing.
Right.
With math, we're kind of expected to know a little bit of all of it.
Yeah.
And I think we could say the same about science in a lot of ways. But we have to give ourselves a little bit of credit for the fact that we may not be able to calculate the deviation of a normal curve at such and such and so forth with statistics if that's not what we do on a regular basis.
Right.
And the same thing with calculus or whatever. We know the math that gets us by. There's a feature that I do on my website or my blog where I interview somebody about how they use math in their everyday life. And every time I reach out to somebody, I'm interviewing people in jobs that we don't typically consider math jobs, but they all say, oh, I really don't use math and I don't like it. And then when I start asking them the questions, they start realizing how much math they use. And they realize that the math they're using feels comfortable for them because it's getting them to where they want to be.
Right. So maybe we're all underestimating ourselves a little.
We are way underestimating ourselves.
And you know, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I want to mention something that I like to mention anytime we're talking about parenting and so forth. And that is, if there's one thing that parents can do for their kids, it's to stop saying that they're bad at math. I mean,
yeah.
Parents.
I've tried really hard to eliminate that sentence from my vocabulary.
And
honestly, a lot of it was that I didn't choose to be bad at math, but I chose to stop trying, honestly, in high school. So, it wouldn't even be accurate.
Right.
Yeah.
And we all choose to stop trying a lot of things.
Right.
You know, I took chemistry, but I didn't want to take it again in college.
Right.
That doesn't mean I'm a giant failure. It just means it didn't really ring my bell, you know? But if my daughter came home with a chemistry question, probably I would not say, and this is just me, but I probably would not say, oh, I don't know how to do that at all. I would probably say, I don't know, let's find out.
Right.
I want to try to figure it out. And that's just how my brain works. particularly for elementary and middle school kids, I think it's important that we at least try. Mm. I think we can cut ourselves some slack when our kids get older and get into the more complicated courses that we really don't have any interest in.
Right.
But some of us are more curious than others. And if you're a naturally curious person, then why not just try it?
Right.
We have the internet now, which our parents did not have. Mm. And I mean, it's a huge difference. We can figure out how to do all kinds of things.
Exactly.
Just by a few taps on the keyboard.
Well, let me ask you, and this is something I had actually not really ever considered, but when you started talking about, for example, like your big picture thinking and how spelling is not a big deal if you get to the, you get to the right answer eventually. And I was thinking the other day about why is it, okay, this is going to be a long, convoluted thought. It's going to take me a while to get to my main point here, but why is it that spelling comes really naturally to me when the English language doesn't really make any sense? It's not like it's a phonetic language. I don't know spelling rules. I mean, if you ask me right now, what are the spelling? I couldn't tell you. But I've always been a really naturally good speller. And I think it's because I was exposed to words from such a young age. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's missing, because I think the way that we expose kids to numbers is just so rudimentary or something. I don't know. It's like when I think about what kind of stuff I was doing with my preschoolers or before they were even in preschool, what was I doing with them numbers wise? Okay, well, maybe we were counting. I mean, it was just kind of compared to what the push for literacy. We don't push math literacy for little kids.
Well, and that's a really interesting thing. There's a great, I don't know if you've ever heard of this. It's a daily email that comes out. It's called Bedtime Math.
Oh, okay. Nope. I had never heard of that.
Oh, it's amazing.
Bedtime Math.
Right. It's a daily email that comes to your inbox in the afternoon. And they set it up with this clever little news related idea, story, something just from the news. And they develop three questions based on that, lower level, middle level, and higher level. It's really designed for preschool, little tiny kids.
Okay,
the way up to older elementary, maybe a little bit in middle school. And the questions are math related and they're very, very basic. It's more about training the parents.
Right.
It's really for the parents. But I think if parents who want to kind of add this numeracy into what they do with their younger kids, this is kind of a way to train us on the right kinds of developmentally appropriate questions to ask and those kinds of things. So they may have like a let's say the story is about the largest elephant or something like that.
Okay.
They might have, for the little kids, there were five elephants in a field and one elephant joins them. How many elephants are there? It's mm-hmm. just that basic. So the idea is to kind of train us parents to look at what's happening around us, whether it's in the news or just everyday life, and finding the numeracy in those experiences.
And numeracy must be the phrase for numerical literacy. Is that what that refers
to?
Okay.
It's like literacy, except with numbers. And it's way beyond facts. And that's where I think we get stuck, because we think math is this very black and white thing. There aren't really many concepts behind it, but when you think about the concepts behind math, it's mind-boggling. Why is 1 1?
Mm, right.
Why does addition work? And you don't have to know those things in order to be able to perform them, but we do learn some kind of sense of those things at a very young age, and that lays everything out for our years to come. It describes how we interact with numbers for, many, many, many years. And I think kids who are naturally critical thinkers or have parents who are naturally questioning them and getting them to think and so forth may develop this a little bit more naturally than kids who are a little more black and white, who maybe don't look at the nuances with things.
Right.
And we may need to help them a little bit more with that. But really what we need to do with numeracy is not hard at all. It is very, very basic. It is things like pointing to birds on a telephone wire and asking our kids how many they think are up there. Hmm. And then maybe when they're a little bit older, if there are five birds up there, saying, you know what, I see three birds there and two birds there, breaking up the five into three and two. Which is a huge concept, because when you can do that, you can do a lot of things with the number five. or taking a bunch of, let's say you've got baby carrots to serve everyone for lunch, taking that pile of baby carrots and having three plates and asking the child to divide the baby carrots into the three plates. What do you do when you have one left over?
Right.
Do they divide up evenly? And watch your child, how they do that. Do they put one on one plate, one on another plate, one on another plate? Or do they divide them up, try to divide them up all at one time? Yeah, and talk to them about that process. Why do they choose to do it that way? I mean, you don't have to get heavy duty with them. Right. But you do this all day long with your kids anyway. This is more in a mathematical area. Another one of my favorites is to take ordinary plastic measuring cups in the bathtub with your kid. Okay. Fill up the one cup and see if it fits into the 1/4 cup. Ask your kid, does all that water fit into the 1/4 cup? Why not? You're getting into bigger and smaller. And then because you're using the measuring cups as they get older, then encourage them to discover that it takes 4 of those 1/4 cups of water to fill the 1 cup. It's just little things like that. I mean, there's nothing to that.
Then they build on that sort of foundation where they're going to be thinking those higher level thoughts down the road.
Yeah. Well, they are thinking the higher level thoughts. They're
right.
They're becoming second nature so that when they're introduced these other concepts later on, they have something to hook it onto. And that's kind of where my philosophy of learning is. I always say that I've got a bunch of hooks in my head and I'm always hooking information onto those hooks. I don't even know what they are. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It categorizes things automatically in my brain. And I think on some level we all do that. We don't always have this awareness that we do that. I have a nephew who says he has little file cabinets in his head. So when he needs information about tigers, he goes to the file cabinet about tigers and pulls out the folder that
right.
That's information that way. That's how he knows his brain works. And I think we all do that. If we don't have a hook for something, then where's it going to land?
Right.
Where's it going to go? So that's actually Piaget's theory. So anyway, but it's kind of idea behind all of that.
Right.
You don't even really have to know that you're doing it.
Right.
You do it automatically anyway.
Well, that's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, I need to take a break really quick, and I hate to do it because I'm really enjoying this conversation, but we will be back in just a few seconds to talk more about math and how we use it every day, and how what I really would love to delve into is how busy people, busy parents can strengthen their math skills when we don't really think we have a lot of time for book studying, and maybe that's not even the point. So we'll be right back. Hi all, Megan here. Hey, did you know that there are recipes on thekitchenhour.com? I've got a few from some of our guests on the shows. Like, for example, I've got a French onion soup from Food Network star Melissa D'Arabian and Grandpa pancakes from Kelly Hampton. I've also got a couple of my own recipes. Like recently I put up my epic bacon, egg, and blue cheese green salad recipe, which makes a really nice hearty meal. You can have it by itself for lunch or with your dinner. It's yummy, and really, who doesn't love adding bacon to pretty much anything? Go ahead and check it out. It's at thekitchenhour.com/recipes. Thanks, and back to the show. Hi, we're back with this episode of The Kitchen Hour. I'm here with Laura Lang, my guest. She is the author of the book Math for Grownups and also the blog Math for Grownups at mathforgrownups.com. We've been talking about all kinds of stuff. We've been talking about the quote-unquote new math, which is also called discovery-based math. I learned something new today. You may know it as everyday math. We've been talking about how to support kids as they're learning math, early childhood numerical literacy, which is called numeracy. I also learned that today. You can check out the show notes, and there will be more information about all the different links and things that we've talked about today. But I want to get back to Laura. She was talking and telling me such interesting things about kind of looking at the big picture of math. And I would love to talk about that for a second. That's something I do not feel like I was ever really encouraged to do, at least in my memory of high school. I'm also a very big picture thinker. And so like the idea of like infinite numbers blows my mind, blah, blah, blah. I don't feel like we were ever really encouraged to kind of explore those concepts. Am I just forgetting or?
No, you're probably right. I think that when we teach kids using algorithms, which is probably the way most of us grownups learned math, we can sacrifice the conceptual stuff behind it. And that's a shame because for me, having the conceptual stuff means that I can add more to it. Mm. An algorithm is so cut and dry.
Right.
There's not much flexibility in an algorithm. Although there is, well, you can create some flexibility, but it's a little harder. But knowing the concepts behind it is really what makes math very, very, very flexible. Mm. So one of the things that most math educators will say, and researchers on this topic will say is that kids and anyone, most people, don't have a real good sense of size. They don't understand infinity. They don't understand what a trillion is, which is a big problem in our country because we're dealing with national budgets that right. are that large. You know, what does that really mean? So these have actual practical consequences, not understanding these things. So I think what you're seeing now in a lot of the math classes is that kids are actually learning what these things mean by practicing with them. So I did it at my daughter's school. I did a penny drive where our goal was to have everyone donate 100,000 pennies. And what that looked like, we had to have this container that was big enough to hold them. And then we had to figure out how to get them to the bank. And
right.
It's a lot of pennies. but it's not a lot of money. So then we had to do all of that as well. So I think you're seeing some schools do that kind of work with their students to really kind of create more of a visualization of what this math actually means than just numbers on a page. Math is a language, and that's really how I deal with it. Hmm. It's a way of describing the world around us. Because sometimes what we know is our language is not going to be enough.
Right.
And I learned when I went to college, that math is the queen of the sciences. That's what we always said, which is a very useful analogy for me because it helps. It really is the way that the sciences are able to describe our physical world, which is what the sciences do. So, and that includes things like cooking and baking and
right
and you know any of those things that require chemistry or biology or physics or geology in any even a very very rudimentary way.
And I'm glad you kind of brought it around to the tasks that we do at home. And since this is a show about being in the kitchen, and a lot of times when you're in the kitchen, your kids are there. So it seems like this great opportunity to talk to them and, you know, to kind of have these, I hate the word learning moments or whatever.
Right.
But you know, that's what I mean. Like there's so many different ways to do it. And I'm wondering if you have some suggestions for ways that maybe when you can't be sitting down at a book with a pencil in your hand, you can still be.
Don't do this with books with kids.
Okay.
I hate worksheets and hate those little workbooks that they send home to our kids. I think they suck all the fun out of math. And I'm not one to say, oh, math is so much fun. You should be having fun. you can't have fun with a worksheet in math. I mean, I don't care how many puzzles you're solving or messages you're deciphering or whatever it
right.
is. It's not that much. I mean, it's fun for a small portion of our population,
right.
but not for many. So I think, and this is a distinction that I always make with parents. Teachers teach, but parents are mentors in these educational pursuits, unless we're homeschooling, which is a totally different thing. But as parents, if we're going to be working with teachers, you know, kind of hand in hand with the teachers, our job is not to teach the material. Our job is to mentor our students through it. And most mentors are not sitting down with a piece of paper and a pencil.
Right.
No matter what kind of job you're in.
Right.
So I think what we do as mentors in this field is in this area is really do a lot of demonstrating, a lot of talking out loud, a lot of, hey, you want to come help me do this, those kinds of things. And it's not a math lesson. If you ever want to alienate most kids, tell them, hey, come in the kitchen and bake with me because we're doing some math. You know, you're not learning math. You're learning how to bake.
Right.
And math is part of it, but it's not it's not the fun part.
Right. And it's very forced, to put it that way.
Yeah, don't force it. Yeah. Right. Really, I see a lot of things on Pinterest and a lot of places where folks are looking at applying the math, and sometimes it is very forced, and mm-hmm. I think you have to be careful with that, because you can alienate your kids. So, you know, I mean, we all know what kind of math we use in the kitchen.
Right.
That's what you want to be doing with your kids. So if I'm doubling a recipe and, you know, I've got 17 things going on, I've got to measure out all of these different things, I've got to make sure the oven is preheated, I've got to get the pan out and grease it and all that kind of stuff, I'm going to give my daughter the flour and say, the recipe calls for 1 1/4 cups. We need to double it. I need you to measure out the flour for this. Mm. I don't give her any other instructions. I don't tell her what to do. Now, she's 12 now, but I probably would have done this at 8 or 7 too. Because really, what's the consequence of her screwing it up?
Right.
It's not that big of a deal.
Right, right.
And she can either learn how to do it on her own and try some things out, or I can tell her how to do it and she might not remember it.
Well, and she doesn't need to know that the double of 1 1/4 cups is 2 1/2 cups right away. All she needs to know is that she needs to fill the 1 cup twice and the 1/4 cup twice, and then hopefully she puts it together in her head.
Right.
Yeah. But so that does make it feel a lot simpler. And I love how you said, you know, it's not math, it's cooking. And that's so true. Like when we try to separate out the math, it's not real life. We're almost more like apprenticing our kids in real life than we are, you know,
right.
trying to like do a heavy-handed teaching.
Right. And you think about it, even giving a tip, that's not math. Mm-hmm. That's being fair to your server.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's, you don't give a tip so you can do math. You give a tip because your server doesn't make whatever the other minimum wage is,
right.
You know, they count on their tips. So you don't want to get that wrong because your server is counting on that. Isn't that a much better lesson for your kids than finding 15%?
Right, right, and right.
Then hopefully they're actually going to care about that 15%.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise they're not going to care.
Yeah.
So
what about financial? And I know it's not exactly the same. I mean, it is math, but it's completely separate. But do you have any tips for helping kids become more financially? And I know that some of that's numbers and some of it's lifestyle. So I guess we could focus on the numbers side of it, but it all goes together.
But
right?
I really do think the values and whatever they are, because all of us come to this with very different values. The values drive what the kids are going to consider important and worthwhile to work at. My daughter is an enormous miser. I mean, she has so much money. One year for Christmas, she asked for a safe instead of something else.
Oh boy.
And I know. She doesn't trust banks. This is a repercussion of our whole big
oh boy.
crisis. She won't put her money in a bank, but she has a safe. And she keeps this running tally of everything. See, that's who she is. That's her value set.
Mm-hmm.
So any financial literacy lessons that we try to help her with have to come from that perspective.
Right.
Other kids are big spenders. They don't want to save anything. So, you know, I think you got to hit them where it matters to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you've really got to be open to where that is. It's not necessarily where we are.
Right. That's true. Know? And also she, like you were saying, you're, you know, a big picture thinker, but if she's a penny counter, she might be more detailed, detail oriented. I have two kids who are like that. They know if someone owes them money, they know to the penny.
Yeah.
How much money they're owed. And I'm much more like, yeah, I'll get you back. You know, you get me this time, I'll get you next time. So it's just a different way of looking at life. And
it is. But we have to manage that in order to remain, you know, financially stable.
Right.
I'm more of a, whatever. If it's close enough, that's good enough. Well, if I'm living on the line financially, that process is not going to work. You know?
Right, right. Yeah. And if you're always the one picking up the tab and like, oh, you'll get me back later, and then they never do.
Yeah.
That's the danger sometimes.
Yeah.
I thought of something earlier, and I just wanted to ask you this because it's something that's been on my mind a lot. I keep hearing from people who say they hated algebra but loved geometry, or they loved geometry but hated algebra. And interestingly, geometry was the one class I did really well in, math class that I did really well in. And I don't know if it because I didn't get to it until like 10th grade. It felt almost like starting over, like I was learning new concepts or something. And like I was already so behind in algebra that maybe that's why, or maybe it was because it was so finite. I mean, I loved doing proofs. I know a lot of people hate doing proofs.
See, that's what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you, did you, because now they don't teach geometry that way anymore, which is
sad.
That's so sad to me, because that's when I fell in love with math, was proofs. I love them. And I think that, honestly, I think that's the writer in us.
Okay.
If we think about how we construct a story for a magazine or a newspaper or whatever, you have to prove that what you're saying is the truth.
Right.
You don't get to just say whatever you want. And that's what you do in a proof.
Right.
You know? So in a story, when we're writing a story, we say something is true, and then we have a quote from someone that backs it up.
Right.
Or studies, or, you know, something like that. And that's all a proof is. So that's what I was going to guess. You know, I don't know of any scientific study on this, but I would bet that the students who are in the proof-based courses in geometry and like them are more of these big picture critical thinkers.
Right.
And the students who really liked the way algebra used to be taught, and it's not taught this way as much anymore, you know, where you get an equation and you learn to do the same thing to each side of the equation to get to isolate the variable, and you do that same thing every single time for 20 problems. These are probably folks who like those kinds of things, are probably folks who are a little bit more into the detail.
Right. And they like the rule and the,
right.
I hated that.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's two different ways of approaching the world. I do think that in the long run, the critical thinking serves people better, because you can only remember the rules for so long if you don't use them.
Right. And then you start forgetting them. And,
Yeah.
And it also, like you were saying before, you know, the frustrating thing to me would be like, I would be doing an equation, and if I left one little thing out, you'd get the whole thing wrong. It's like none of your effort counted at all. That was so frustrating, because I know you have to get the right answer.
Yeah, but sometimes, see, that's not how I taught, though.
I
told my students that they needed to show their work. And the answer, getting the correct answer, was part of it.
Right.
But if I follow what they were doing and see where they made their mistake, then they would get partial credit.
Okay.
It's not fair. I mean,
right. You know,
they're spending 5 minutes on a problem.
Right.
Is that fair for the last answer to be the only thing that counts?
Right. Yeah.
And another point that we have to make sure that we're doing as parents, and really hopefully encouraging teachers to do, is that this is process. This is not getting the right answer.
Hmm.
It's all about process. Anytime that we are out in the real world doing math, and this is except for the folks who are doing math in life or death situations, that's always an exception. The process, 9 times out of 10, matters so much more than the final answer. We learn so much from the process. If I forget to double the flour in a recipe, the cookies are not going to turn out.
Right.
And I'm going to realize at some point that's what I did wrong.
Right.
Now, the way I learn, I'm going to remember that for next time. Maybe I make a note in the recipe book.
Right.
But I'm going to double everything and write it in the book instead of redoing the calculations every time. But there's something that's going to help me remember that. And I think that's true. It's definitely true for school.
Hmm.
These answers are not life or death. And I don't care what educational, you know, expert tells us how important these test scores are and all that kind of stuff. That's garbage. Our kids are learning. They're not, you know, on a factory line coming a certain way.
Right.
You know, and clearly I have an opinion about these
things. That's fine. I have the same opinion. So, well, and it's like, and those things can come later. Like, I mean, okay, if you are going to be the guy who has to calculate the exact angle the spaceship has to be to whatever, I mean, you have plenty of time to get that down.
But the other part is, you're not the only guy checking that.
That's true.
If it's a life or death situation, I would bet most of these folks have many, many checkpoints for these things.
Right. And tools at their disposal. They're not doing this math in their heads, I wouldn't assume. Okay.
There might be someone along the line who's doing the math in their head.
Right.
Check to make sure that the tools were right. And then the tools are checking, you know.
Right, right.
It's like Norm Abrams saying, you know, measure twice, cut once. That's exactly what we're doing in these life or death situations most of the time, too, is that there are many checkpoints to make sure that the calculations are accurate.
Mm. So. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, this has been great, and I really feel like I've learned a lot, and I feel like I'm in a better position to help my kids learn, and that's really, I mean, I think a lot of us are just coming to this so overwhelmed And even if we felt like we were good in math, in fact, sometimes I think that's more frustrating for the parents who enjoyed math the first time around, the way they learned it.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of easy for me to be like, ah, screw it. You know, I didn't like it the first time, so I'm willing to chuck that and start with this new, like, I'm really excited to know that that's not how they teach algebra anymore, because now I'm going to go delve more deeply into my son's text, because I'm really curious, how do they teach it if it's not the way I learned it?
There, a lot of that is still in place, but yeah, it's just a probably more conceptual on the front end. So.
Right. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And I just, you know, it is math for grown-ups. And I love that that's the name of your book. It's Math for Grown-ups. Like, grown-ups do math every single day. Don't be afraid of it.
You don't. Well, I think people are very surprised at how much math they do.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's just, you can't get through life without it.
So do you have any suggestions for ways that people, I mean, we talked a little bit about teaching kids by demonstration and mentoring them, but what about your, you know, getting your own skills kind of brushed up a little bit, especially for the busy parent? Do you have any suggested resources or just things that they can do?
Things.
Okay.
One is do the math in things that you actually like.
Okay.
Not interested in robotics, and you think robotics is going to be the way you're going to learn math, that you're wrong, you know?
Right.
If you love sewing, delve into sewing, or if you're interested in sewing, and the math will become clear out of that. It's very, very clear in sewing. I mean, there's so many fractions in sewing, it's not funny. But the other thing is, there are some really wonderful resources online for parents and for students who are having difficulty with something or need a quick refresher in more of an academic sense.
Okay.
So there are, my favorite resource of all times is the Khan Academy. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
The Khan Academy?
Huh? K-A-H-N Academy.
Okay. And for listeners, I will put all of these links in the show notes. So just check the show notes out and they'll be there. Okay, go ahead.
It's a website filled with videos. This fellow, his nieces were having difficulty with their math, and he started creating these videos for them to explain the math that they were doing. And they were so useful that he built this entire website. It's all free. It's been supported by lots of money in, you know, donors and so forth, and great grants. But he has the most conversational way of approaching this stuff. Very accessible from a pedagogical perspective. He really understands what needs to be introduced first before the next step can be understood, and so on. When heavy technical terms need to be introduced and when you can just ignore those and something ordinary. He's got sections on math and some science. The economics is unbelievable. I've used it quite a bit in recent years to try to figure out the difference between deficit and a debt and those kinds of things, just out of curiosity. And then I think he's got some history stuff as well. But I would highly recommend that. That is, for the math part, it's very, very academic. But, for example, if your kid doesn't understand how to use the quadratic formula, and, you know, you can't help them,
right?
Then this video will probably be very useful for both of you. And I would recommend the parents watch it with their kids, because I think you might find out that you're not as bad at math as you might think.
And maybe more interested in it than you might think.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. You know, it's that whole thing, you know, I know lots of colleges have recognized that returning students are great because they've got a level of maturity, that allows them to be more persistent and ask, you know, better questions and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, as an adult, you might find out that it's a great time to go back and learn some math in that way. But otherwise, just try it out and see, you know, if you're scared of building a deck because you're worried about the geometry, you know, build the deck and, you know, go online and look at all these resources that, you know, all these DIY resources, and you'll learn the math at the same time.
Right. So. That makes a lot of sense. Well, it's been just a pleasure, Laura. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for joining me for this week's episode of the Kitchen Hour podcast. To find out more about the guest I spoke with today and some of the things we talked about, you can find the show notes for this episode and all episodes of the Kitchen Hour podcast at thekitchenhour.com/podcasts. Thanks, and see you next time.